So we are in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, continuing our study through Ecclesiastes. There we go. Let me start out just by asking you, if you were going to be a missionary, where would you like to be a missionary?
Caribbean.
Okay, good.
If I'm being real honest, yes. Somewhere that I don't have to worry about being persecuted,
okay.
Physically persecuted for my life.
Okay.
That would be ideal.
Rather not have to lose my head.
Right, like someplace where my children would be safe.
Okay, where else? You know, think of a place. Where would you like, if you were going to be a missionary, to be a missionary?
Japan.
New Zealand, all right. You know, I'm thinking someplace where they speak English. Mm-hmm. England, Scotland, Ireland would be probably up there. New Zealand, Australia, all, you know, going like that. Oh, yeah. Great. Where would you not want to be a missionary?
North Korea,
the Middle East. If you go to the website Open Doors and look at some of the worst nations for Christian persecution, you can paint across North Africa, continue through the Middle East, with the exception of Israel, all the way over through India. You might as well just keep going all across South Asia there and across over into Turkey as far as some of the worst persecution of Christians therein. That is, you can think of water leaking. This is leaking down into Africa too, as Islam has a great hold there. And if you guys start getting cold, you can bump that up a degree. Usually I'm the one who's like up here sweating bullets, and I'm a little chilly. So, but I don't care. I'm moving. Why are these bad places to be missionaries? Well, they want to kill you. They want to kill you. It isn't merely that they make it difficult. I mean, it's becoming more and more difficult in Western Europe, but they're at least not to the point where they're killing you yet. Yet. Notice I say yet. As the Islamization of Europe is taking place, that may change as secular hostilities grow more and more toward Christianity. That may change also. By the way, I'll pass this around.
No, that's okay. Pass it around in case you can send that.
Where did Paul go to be a missionary?
Here, there, over there.
Okay. In comparison to the, hey, I'd like to go here, I really don't want to go there. Where did Paul go?
Where they wanted to kill him?
Yeah, well, really, in a lot of ways, it's where God led him. But he went to places really that were natural for him to go. You know, Asia Minor was not foreign to him. He was from Tarsus, which is in southern Turkey. And he just kind of kept going from there. They sailed to Cyprus and went to places where ultimately he could speak the language, where there were Jewish synagogues. And he tried to win the Jews and then ultimately went to the Gentiles, received the Macedonian call, went over into Macedonia, northern Greece there, and then came down into Greece proper. But he didn't go thinking, I'm gonna get stoned, I'm gonna get beaten with rods, oh, shipwrecks, oh yeah. No, he didn't think any of that. He just went. He was compelled really by the gospel. I bring all this up because we start out reading about oppression here in verses 1-3 of chapter 4. Arnold, would you read verses 1-3, please, of chapter 4?
I returned and considered all oppression that are done under the sun, and beheld the tears of such as were opposed. They had no comfort, and on the side of their oppressors there was power, but they had no comfort. For I praise the dead which are already dead,
Corbin, would you turn to 1 Kings chapter 5, please? Stephanie, 1 Kings chapter 9. Tracy, 2 Chronicles chapter 2, please. Now, Solomon's writing this, and when we think of oppression, what do you think of?
Physical resistance.
Okay. What comes to mind? Okay, concentration camps. Was had Israel ever experienced oppression? Yeah, for 400 years. 400 years at the hand of Pharaoh. Okay, and then they went into exile. But there was, you know, a lot of times you'll think forced labor in there as well. And this is interesting. You read this and you go, if you know anything about Solomon, you may go, hypocrite. Here he's talking about oppression being bad, and Solomon did these things. 1 Kings chapter 5, verses 13 through 15, please.
King Solomon drafted forced labor out of all Israel, and the draft numbered 30,000 men. And he sent them to Lebanon, 10,000 a month in shifts. He would be a month in Lebanon and 2 months at home. Adoniram was in charge of the draft. Solomon also had 70,000 burden bearers and 80,000 stone cutters in the hill country. 13 to what?
15. Okay. Forced labor? Out of Israel? Now, we have, if you simply had that, you would go, he enslaved his own people. You go, no. Chapter 9, verses 20 to 22 of 1 Kings.
There were still people left from the Ammonites, Hittites, and Perizzites.
Sorry.
Hittites and
those guys.
Perizzites. Solomon conscribed the descendants of all these people remaining in the land from the Israelites could not exterminate to serve as slave labor as it is to this day. But Solomon did not make slaves of any of his. Of any of the Israelites. They were his fighting men, his government officials, his officers, his captains, and the commanders of the chariots and the charioteers.
Okay. So he did not conscript his own people. Who did he conscript?
People of the land. The others.
Yeah, the Ites. The Canaan, yeah. Those who were there. What should have happened to them? Yeah, they shouldn't even be there. So in some ways you can go, well, this is grace really poured out on them because God's judgment was that they were to be exterminated. Why? Because they were wicked. God judged the nations of Canaan as wicked and worthy of extermination all. God in his righteous judgment. So Solomon conscripted them, but from what we've read so far, they labored for how long?
A month.
1 month. And then they had 2 months off. Okay, you go, 1 day on, 2 days off. That's not so bad. Really? You go, okay, you're gonna be working hard, and if bless you. If I'm working my people, I'm going to have to feed my people. So you would think that they are being fed as well. So there's this picture potentially of Solomon being an oppressor. Tracy, would you read 2 Chronicles chapter 2, 17 and 18?
Then Solomon counted all the resident aliens who were in the land of Israel after the census of them that David his father had taken. And there were found 153,600. 70,000 of them he assigned to bear burdens, 80,000 to quarry in the hill country, and 3,600 as overseers to make the people work.
Okay, so their own people were actually overseeing them in their labor, and you get no sense in here that Solomon is anything like Pharaoh. in this, in his conscription. So I just wanted to kind of dispel a notion of hypocrisy as we look at this. So oppression, we get more of a sense of an abuse of power there, where you are abusive to people. Why? Because you don't like them for some reason. They are beneath you. They are less than you are. And this is a terrible thing here. No one to comfort the oppressed. Solomon recognizes it for what it is. Now, you know, we as Christians, we're going to go, yeah, Christians are oppressed throughout the world and through much of the Middle East. And that's true, but are there other oppressed people groups that you know of? Yeah. Who?
Black Americans.
Where?
Here.
In the South, here. Everywhere they are. Huh.
Are you going to take a knee?
No.
It's kind of broad when you say oppressed.
Yeah, there's different. There's very different level of oppression. Like when you talk about people in the Middle East versus, like, you know, people here in our country. It's
right.
Very,
good.
New,
good. Let's. Yeah. Let's.
Spectrum.
Yeah.
Feminists would say they're oppressed.
Who?
Feminists.
Okay. Let's get out of our country.
North Korea is an oppressed people.
Okay.
Yes.
They are. You know, even the people, the citizenry. Do you know that there are Muslims who are oppressed by other Muslims? Because they aren't the right flavor. Just as, you know, Protestant and Catholic Christianity were at odds in the past. In Southeast Asia, in China, women are oppressed because of the extreme social catastrophe that was created in China. Sexual slavery is epidemic in China and really all the nations that border to the south, as women are kidnapped and brought into China to essentially serve as sexual slaves. And so there's terrible treatment of humanity all over. And how does Solomon describe it in verse 2? Man, the dead are more fortunate than some who are alive.
Those yet born.
Yeah. I mean, we have no comprehension. We have no comprehension. To receive a slight for a job, if I don't get a job because of my religion or because of my skin color, that is a difficulty. That is an inconvenience. That is a bigotry, but it is nothing compared to enslavement. There. It is a slight of dignity. I will not diminish that. So what do we do? You know, what is our recourse as believers here when we hear of this, when we know of this? Is there anything for us to do? Can we do anything? Bummer. Glad we're not there. No, we pray. We can pray. Is there anything else we can do? And let me not diminish that either. There is nothing that will be done on earth apart from God's moving. Can't. And so to plead with him for the saints. Open Doors. There's a Voice of the Martyrs. Maybe Open Doors has a monthly prayer guide where you can pray for persecuted Christians throughout the world. And kind of methodically goes through a little PDF file you can download if you want to do that. So, man, we can pray for those saints. What are my prayers avail? I don't know. But I know where they go, and I know who's hearing them. And I know he does hear because of the shed blood of Jesus Christ. Okay, is there anything you can then do after you pray?
I think that their voices be heard. You know, make people aware of what is going on.
Who can we make aware, Chris?
Politicians, people everywhere that we can come in contact with.
Okay, politicians. Okay, write your congressman. Let them know, hey, did you know this is going on? You know, perhaps at least the United States needs to go, that's wrong. At least make the voice heard. Bring this to international awareness, maybe national awareness. Yes. What's that require? Time. How much? About 15 minutes. 15 of your minutes. How do I learn about what's going on in the world? How do I know that there's persecution going on in the world? Yeah! Okay, you have to be an informed individual. Okay, I need to get my head out of the sand and understand that there's an international situation and not just, you know, laugh here on Ethan Travis. At the same time, the poor we will have with us always. The persecuted we will have with us always. I can't feed every poor person. I can't be aware of the persecution in every country. I can't bear that burden. God doesn't mean for you to bear that burden. And so as things come your way, God will open your eyes to things if you ask to have eyes to see for the oppressions that are out there, because they are grievous. And then maybe pursue what God opens your eyes to at least be in prayer for them and to speak to those. So, you know, our first takeaway, normally I do takeaways at the end, but since this chapter is a section of Proverbs, I'm going to kind of do the takeaways right here at the end of each one. Takeaway one, man, we need to understand that abuses of power exist here in the world. I think it's really important that we know and understand about them before we speak about them. Because if I'm just, you know, sharing memes, you know, maybe you need to dig a little deeper than sharing a meme there so that you can speak with some articulation to the statement. And then when we do, obviously and always, let us speak the truth in humility and with love and grace. Oppression. Questions? Comments? Work. So here we have a section next after oppression, ironically, where he talks about work. Verses 4 through 8. Jeremy, would you read 4 through 8, please?
Then I saw that all toil and all skill and work come from a man's envy of his neighbor. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. The fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. Better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and striving after wind. Again, I saw vanity under the sun. One person who has no other, either son or brother, yet there is no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, for whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure? This also is vanity and an unhappy business.
Good. So back to verse 4. All toil and all skill and work come from man's envy of his neighbor. Is that a true statement?
Wait, say it. Repeat it.
That's what he said. All toil and all skill and work come from man's envy of his neighbor.
Opinion.
No, it's not always true.
It's not always true. What is he doing?
generalizing.
He's
hyperbole.
Yeah, he's exaggerating. Okay, I gotta tell you, I experienced this week. I experience this just about every time I walk into the theater.
Into the theater?
Into the theater. There's a guy, Jim Hall, is his name. He sings at the end of the show we're doing, God Bless America. I mean, his voice is like a trumpet. His voice is an anthem. It's extraordinary. I was sitting in the green room last night, and there was another woman. Jim's not a woman. There was a woman there. And she sings Amazing Grace during the show, but there was a song going on, and she was just harmonizing with it. And people can actually do that. They can just harmonize.
Yes, people.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And your wife, to hear her sing out there, I go, oh man, oh, I would love to sing like that. I would love to sing like that. And I want to be, I have to do a four-part harmony. It's actually only 3.5-part. I just follow Jim. There's a quartet of us. We sing Tumbling Tumbleweeds. And I just hang on to Jim's voice and kind of sing with him while the other two guys sing harmony. And I feel like a loafer with tuxedos there. And that envy builds up. I don't want to let them down. Can this envy be a good thing? Is envy a good thing?
No.
Okay, so how can this be a good thing?
It can make you strive to practice, to do better.
How can I do that without envy?
Recognize good talent, and recognize that that's their gift, and I can try to emulate it or learn from it.
It would be very easy to make it an idol in your life, you know. And you have to ask yourself, what is my motivation for that? Why do I wish I could do that? What am I going to get from it? Or what can I give to other people? Like you said, you don't want to let them down. So is that the impetus, or is it the glory that comes from having a voice like that? And so there's a very fine line, I think, there.
Yeah. It seems like whenever we go over it, it's always, do I want this gift so that people will shower me with? Or do I want this gift so I can share it with everybody else? And Ecclesiastes, it always seems to be that. It's, do I want it so that people will look at me, or do I want it so that I can share it with other people?
Yeah, Jim says, I never sang outside of church until he started doing stuff on stage. Never. And now people are just blessed and blown away because he is sharing essentially what God has given him there. And Jim loves the Lord. And, you know, it's a great thing. And this is such a challenge in our world. This verse, what a pithy verse right here, pithy passage. When I see excellence in my brothers and sisters, I need to go, oh, that's awesome. Praise to the Lord for that. That is awesome.
I think it's very easy to, along with the envy, is to also kind of have some like self-deprecation there to say, sometimes you feel like you have this amazing thing and this gift that I have is not as good as, I'm not as good at my gift as yours, or my gift is not as important. I can't do as much, you know, with it.
Think of what Paul said as I read that passage in Philippians. He says it also to the Corinthians. Imitate me. Follow me as I follow Christ. Okay, and so you may look at somebody else and go, man, that person's a giant in the faith. Oh, you know, I stink. No. Or, you know, Jeremy and I were, you know, we're pastoring a little bitty church on Ethan Travis. We're not John MacArthur. I'm not even Bill Bob McCartney. You know, no. No. You know, I extol and I praise God for the work of every man, for the good work of every man. And for those who are, and again, a big church is not a big ministry. And a big church is not a heart for the Lord either. But I do follow others as they follow Christ. And perhaps, you know, if I want to be better at a thing, who better to follow than somebody who's good at the thing? But that envy and that jealousy really has no place. Has no place. It is so destructive, jealousy, because from jealousy comes bitterness. And you don't love. You don't love the other people when there is that bitterness. You want to see them brought down instead of high and lifted up. Ugh. Terrible. So, you know, that's really the second takeaway. As Christians, we should rejoice in the accomplishments and the abilities that God gives to others. And do the best with what you've got. That's all you can do. Who gives the crop? God gives the crop. Do you plant, you water, you weed, you fertilize, and God gives the crop. God gives the crop. Follow me as I follow Christ. There. Verse 5. What a wicked, startling verse 5 is. The fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. What? So what does that mean? The fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh.
Destroys himself.
How?
Drugs, alcohol.
Well, what's it mean, he folds his hands? Does he pray?
No.
No, he doesn't do anything.
He's idle.
He's idle. Mm-hmm.
That's right. The fool is idle. That's Proverbs.
And Proverbs is full of sloth, sluggard. Go to the ant, you sluggard. We looked at that on Wednesday nights here.
So the fool is lazy and he eats his own flesh. Yeah, I mean, he ultimately destroys himself because he's got nothing. So what's he do? He starts to eat himself. You know, as his flesh rots, he doesn't care for it there in his laziness. And so, you know, essentially work. Work. I mean, you've got to work. And we've discussed that in great extent, so I'll not really expound on that much more. As we move into verse 6, so as far as toil is concerned then, as far as work is concerned, better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and striving after the wind. Two hands full of toil. What is the imagery? If I got two hands full of toil, what else can I do?
Nothing.
Okay, I am consumed by work.
Stress.
I I am... Well, with that can come stress. There are people who do a ton of work in a little amount of time. You know, more work than I can get done in a day, they'll get done in half an hour. Very organized, very efficient people, and perhaps not even stressed in doing it. You know, therein is a life to enjoy. But Solomon decries this as not a good thing. Hands full of toil and striving after the wind. Striving after, really, again, the things on this plane, as he has made clear so far. You are laboring hard. You are laboring round the clock for things that are going to burn. Better is what? Some time to stop.
Enjoy your labor.
You know, look back and go, man, that was good. It was good. That's okay. You can say that. Because ultimately, in that satisfaction, hopefully as believers, you're going, I did that because you did that. You did that. I wish I could recall it. There was a verse that I came across in Isaiah or Jeremiah last night that all my labors are by your hand, essentially, is what it said. I'll try and dig that up and zap it to you guys. All my labors are by your hand. And we recognize this. We speak of it often. But to be able to be quiet and really to enjoy the world and the life and the people that God has given me. Are there going to be seasons of grind? Yes. Are there going to be seasons where you've got two hands full of toil? Yeah. Yeah, they come. They come. But you need to make sure that that does not become your life, unless you are oppressed, in which case you cry out to the living God, who hears, our God who hears. So yes, work. Work, enjoy the quiet, enjoy working really for the Lord. Verse 7 and 8 are very interesting. Again, I saw vanity under the sun. One person who has no other, either son or brother, yet there is no end to all his toil. His eyes are never satisfied, so that he never asks, for whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure? This also is vanity and an unhappy business. There is a darkness to solitude. There is a darkness that comes from solitude. God did not mean for us to be alone. How do we know that?
Creation camp.
Yes. Because God, the one void in the creation was no female. And God declared, it is not good for man to be alone. All the animals, all the plants, it is. And God, he had the fellowship of the living God. And God said, it is not good for man to be alone. Now we go, yeah, okay, that was woman that he then made. But God shows man his need for a completer, for a companion, and for fellowship. And it isn't just sexual fellowship. It is the companionship of other people that will come from family and community as well, that extends out from that. So it is not good for man to be alone. I came across this quote this week that I thought, oh man. Blake Lively, actress. She said, if I'm not with somebody who really excites me or inspires me, I'd rather be by myself. The universe orbits her little nugget. So if you don't excite me, I'd rather be by myself. You know, God, you know, if you people don't excite me, no, I need to be in your life. I need to care about you, whether you excite me or not. I need to be invested in you. People, humanity. You will be a blessing to me. Now, this guy has no son, no brother. For whom is his labor? And we may look at this and go, wait. What about the single man? What about the man or woman whose parents have died and he has no children?
So that's community.
Pardon me?
So that's community, right? Being part of something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, who does that depend upon?
That person.
Yes. Yes. Now, some people need the gospel. No, everybody needs the gospel. But there are people who are going to be hermits until when?
They die.
Okay, that would be the negative. How about the positive? They are hermits until...
until you make them not be a hermit.
Yes! Until you interject yourself into their isolation. You move into their isolation and draw them out. You go in with the light of the gospel. The love of Jesus Christ. You go in and you bring them into community. And help them to see that... this toil to, oh yeah, dude, you got the nicest Harley in the world. You got 8 of them. And you go to the Southern Med, you know, 3 times a year. Oh yeah, all by yourself. So there's a deep darkness to solitude that can be very dangerous. God calls us not to be alone. Now, for those of us who have large families or families, is it ever good for you to be alone?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. But if that becomes our God, you know... you know, there are times to get alone and pray. There are times for you and the Lord to commune together. There are times for you to let your brain just kind of unravel. Not for it to be void, but for the tension in the mind to just...
There's dangers even in that.
Okay. Yeah.
Just to get to your responsibilities to get to that me time.
Yes. TGIF. Well, it's like the alcoholic who goes, oh man, I can't wait until I can get home until I can get my next drink. Or he stashes it in his desk. Where, I feel much better now. But I'm so stressed. I'm so focused on my next time alone that everything, you're all in annoyance until I can get there and go. So therein is a bad perspective of it, but you know that time where we can, time of rest, really a time of rest. You hear about women of old who would simply take their apron, and when mom's got her apron over her head, you leave her alone. You know, and that she would just, you know, all chaos around. I don't know how she shut out the din, but You know, she had her time just perhaps with her and the Lord. God, refresh me here now. Isolation. So isolation can be, ooh. But he goes on, two are better than one because they have good reward for their toil. What do we call that? Two are better than one. What's the neat word for that?
Accountability.
Where one plus one equals more than two. You know, it's... Synergy. Did you ever hear the word synergy? Synergy? Well, oh, there's actually a better thing there. You'll hear the term mutual support there as well for military term.
I guess the reason why I say accountability is because a lot of times I hear this verse applied to accountability.
That's great. That's great. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. You know, working together, man, it's good. You've got the fellowship during the work there, and you can get more accomplished with two there than one person can do by himself. And if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone. When he falls, he has not another to lift him up. And man, that's really true in accountability, spiritual accountability. If I sin, have another brother go, you know that was wrong. Come on, get up and continue to pursue holiness. He's not going, that was wrong. Wham, wham. Let me beat you and pummel you some more because you are a sinner.
I think that's one of the dangers in not being active in a church. You know, that you don't have those people around you. If you spend all of your time as a believer with people who don't share your faith or even don't have the same level of spiritual maturity as you have, then you don't have that.
Great.
You can't always be the one to lift other people up.
Great. Why don't we want to be accountable to other people?
Because
it's hard.
Plus, we have to be...
Because we sin a lot.
Yeah, because I'm a, because I struggle with sin.
No, yeah, I mean, with accountability, you have to be willing to open yourself up and for the other person to ask the really tough questions that you would not ask in a, you know, Bible study setting, for example. When was the last time you lusted?
If we say we are without sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. Absolutely. So there's support. There is support in difficult times. In injury, you know, somebody gets hurt, you fall down, you can help them up. Two lie together, they can keep warm. You know, there's basic needs. Two together can handle basic needs a lot better than you can in isolation. In war, though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. You know, better to go to battle with somebody at my side than all by myself. Again, mutual support. And so, and then we get to the cord of three strands that is will not be quickly broken, and this is the Mardell plaque. And, you know, everybody goes, oh, it's Jesus. And, you know, okay. In context, no. Okay. Do we understand this, the importance of God in my life? Yes. But if there's a cord of three strands, me, my buddy, and the Lord, who's doing all the work?
The Lord.
The Lord. I mean, what am I offering that cord? Really? Nothing. So it's a cord of one, and I'm clinging to it like nobody's business. Okay, it's a cord of one strand. It's Jesus Christ. There. So... Look at it, what it is.
Just look okay. At it practically.
Yeah, exactly. So isolation is not good. Beware of solitude. It is good at times. It should not be the norm in our life because it can become a hovel of vanity and pride. There. The last section is a little complicated. It's a little weird, kind of dealing with the preeminence of wisdom. Better was a poor and wise youth. This is one where pronouns become challenging here. Better was a poor and wise youth than an old foolish king who no longer knew how to take advice. For he went from prison to the throne in his own kingdom. He had been born poor. Though in his own kingdom he had been born poor. Okay, are we talking about the poor lad or are we talking about the old king now? So already we're lost. I saw all the living who move about under the sun, along with that youth who was to stand in the king's place. Well, maybe it was the youth. There was no end of all the people of all whom he led, yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. Okay, those who come later, much later, who don't remember who was the president at the turn of the 20th century. Anybody know who the president was at the turn of the 20th century?
Woodrow Wilson.
No.
Bill Clinton.
Huh?
Bill Clinton.
No, at the turn of the 20th, 19th through 19th to the 20th. And you go, I don't remember. Probably closer than Wilson. There, I don't know. I don't have it.
Yeah.
So we don't. So okay. So let's glean from this what we can. Better was a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king. Okay, is this a discussion of youth and age, where youth is better than age?
No.
No. What's it a discussion of?
Discernment.
Of discernment and wisdom. Okay, foolishness and wisdom. Better to be wise. Man, if you're poor and young, better to be poor, young, and wise than old, foolish, and the king of a nation. Wisdom. What do you want for your children? Power, wealth, or do you want wisdom? For your kings, or for your kids. Wisdom. That should be our desire, but man, that is not the American dream. The American dream is wealth and power. To be an old rich king. Dumber than a rock. No, we want wise kids. We give them so much more if we give them wisdom. All right, so those are our takeaways, really, through chapter 4. Just some sections on really life. We start out with oppression. We look at labor and our envy. Of one another, and whether or not I'm a workaholic or if I do have times of quiet in my life, but quiet can quickly track into solitude, being a solitude alcoholic, if you would, and the dangers potentially therein. All right. So that's kind of a broken look at a number of Proverbs here in chapter 4. Next week we're looking at wealth and worship. Any questions or comments here regarding the Proverbs within Ecclesiastes this week?
What's the good story?
What good story? Is this a good story of the poor man and the king? And the more I went over it, it's really hard to discern who's on first, so I wasn't going to press it.